Hello, and welcome back, or welcome to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, installment number 9. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for listening. I've got super news, for me anyway. It felt really great to get it. And as promised, listener feedback, listener mail, comes at the very beginning of the show. And I got one. It is from Digger's Story. And Digger's Story is another podcast. Digger's Story was one of the first two podcasts to officially recognize and, in fact, congratulate International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. And that was super, but this relates directly. This is listener feedback, because it relates directly to the last episode, number 8, the one we had just for fun, where we wanted to round up, exhume, and then bury again those awful characters from books, films, or television. And so we did. If you didn't hear that episode, try giving it a listen. It was quite entertaining. Because I interviewed all the people I worked with and got their points of view on it. And now we're going to hear this point of view. Hey, Anum 5. I have had several experiences not being able to get my podcast posted. I bet most podcasters have. I'm sorry I'm going to slaughter this letter, but this is just fun. I'm reading my first listener feedback. Thank you very much, Digger's Story. It's part of the show. Some go up so easy, too. So take heart. You sound like you work with a great crew. They did a great job. Please let them know, and I hope you will use them for future shows. I absolutely intend to use them for future shows. I just have to think of the right question. Back to the letter. To answer your request for emails on characters in fiction that deserve our negative energy, how about the Annoying Man? There's a fictional character that lived up to their name. How was the Annoying Man created? In the late 80s, Saturday Night Live Weekend Update, a character was created by Conan O'Brien. Unknown in the late 80s. And this email, by the way, is great. It's got embedded pictures of all the people she's talking about. It's really terrific. O'Brien wrote a sketch after John Lovitz bugged Conan O'Brien to write a character or a sketch for him for the show. Thus, the birth of the commentary man from Hades was born, Annoying Man, to make Dennis Miller's life miserable. The whining, annoying man ate tinfoil as well as brownies he specifically brought in for Dennis Miller to eat, and with his mouth open, sounding like a pig, of course. If that wasn't enough, he had a knack for making high, shrilled scratching on a blackboard or plate. There's more. One of the worst acts he performed was when he squeezed and popped his zit, spraying the ooey-gooey mess all over Dennis Miller. But, yeah, that was not the worst of it all. Nay, it was when this doofus mocked the Bunny O Extraordinaire, energized the Energizer Bunny. Don't mess with my cutanas of media icons. This is why the AM, Annoying Man, lasted for only 7 episodes. A short time. Our culture knows its limits. Thank our lucky TV guides. How to bring this jerk down so he suffers for eternity? My suggestion is, clone the Annoying Man with the strict mission to annoy the original Annoying Man. Neither get to die. Hell on earth for eternity with himself in form. Dying is too easy for this ultramaroon. Ah, I feel much better. Namaste. And that's diggerstory.com. diggerstory.com. You've heard promos for that podcast on IDDFOS, and you'll hear another one in this episode. Go and check it out. Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much. The very first listener feedback. And as I've said, anyone else cares to write in, please do. These will be read always at the beginning of the show. I won't wait until the end. I'll read them all right at the start. And so today, the topic will be good and evil. An extremely expansive, an extremely complex at times subject. And unfortunately, the bulk of this particular installment has already been recorded, and it's one of those exterior and in the car jobs, but I try to make them as what's a synonym for audio legibility? Discernible? I try to make them as easy to listen to as possible. I generally try to talk over the trucks and over the sound of the car. And I do apologize, but you can generally get the gist. I'm going to aim more and more towards doing recordings under these circumstances where it should be easier to hear what I'm trying to say. But this particular episode has already been recorded, and I think I'll just be quiet now and let it happen. Thanks.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work. I end up talking about Greek theater being 6,000 years ago. I end up talking about how much I like British accents when I'm referring to a podcast that comes out of Australia. And that's not really splitting hairs, because there's quite a geographic distance there. So what about important stuff? I did have something in mind. I did have good and evil. How universal is that? Oh, that should be pretty easy, actually, to cover in an hour. Not a very deep topic, that one. Good and evil. Naughty and nice. Warm fuzzy. Cold prickly. Maybe it'll just stay on good and evil, or maybe we'll skip into opposites. Good. All right. Let's examine this. There's good and there's evil. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. I think that about covers it. That's too clear cut. Tanum, I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view, good and evil. What you talking about, good and evil? This or that? There's gray areas. No, I don't think so. I think there should be clearer cut definitions than, well, it depends. Because there is evil. In a political sense, the expression, we are at war with evil, that's just a carte blanche to do whatever the hell you want. That's just writing your own ticket for as many blatant violations as you want to perpetrate. It's just rhetoric. But for the real deal, yeah, there is evil. Or should you say there are evil acts? There are evil deeds. Is it possible to behave in an evil way? Absolutely. Can a human being be defined as evil? You are evil as a person. Can a person be evil? I don't know. A human being can certainly have an imbalance of evil behavior. A person can certainly do far more than his or her fair share of evil deeds. But is that person evil? No, that's a person. That's a human being. A person can't be a concept. You can use the term evil to describe whoever it is, but it's not comprehensive. That's where the gray areas come in, because it's a classic rule of thumb. It's a classic guideline. When you're putting together a story, the classic guideline is, well, whoever's doing the evil believes that they are doing the right thing, or feels thoroughly justified in doing the evil thing. And that can be applied probably to genuine, actual, living, breathing, or dead figures, present day and historically. Talk about dead air. I've been sitting here thinking, I'm painting with a roller here, a big roller. I'm not getting into any kind of detail. I've been sitting here thinking of, trying to think of an example, or lots of different examples, of evil deeds. I want to think of one that's in that shady gray area, and I want to think of one that's absolutely clear-cut, that is an evil deed. Let's go with the latter, all right? Clear-cut. This is an evil thing to do. You ring the doorbell on the home of an elderly couple. You walk in, you give them a big sale, song and dance, because you're highly skilled at that sort of thing, and you sell them a phony insurance policy and take a down payment and disappear forever. A considerable down payment in cash. That's an evil deed. Or you're in an impoverished, war-torn country, and the only people that seem to be getting any food, water, or the basic necessities of life are the ones that are roaming around in gangs carrying guns. And you move into what seems to be a relatively safe territory. By that, I mean there are fewer other gangs carrying guns in that territory. You move in, you find a homestead of some kind, little shack, little farm. Maybe there's a goat out back, whatever. You bust in the door. You start beating up the husband and wife, you and your gang. The woman ends up being raped and the husband shot. You move on. You can't get much more evil than that. Actually, yeah, I suppose you can. But that's quite obviously, to me, an evil deed. Are the people doing that justifying in any way what they're doing, or they're just doing it? Is a group of men on that level of behavior even bothering with justification? Do the terms good and evil even pop into the mind at any point during an activity like that? I don't know. It's beyond my experience and absolutely beyond my understanding that something like that could happen, and yet it has and continues to and in other places around the world. But yeah, that's evil. You've got two evil deeds there. Now you got the one guy, the crumb bum, that just ripped off an elderly couple who may or may not have enough cash to get by to begin with, and how do you justify that? How does that scam artist justify what he's done? Oh, well, they were stupid and they deserved it? That's pretty weak justification. Oh, well, I've tried to get along legitimately and just can't seem to do it, so I've made use of the skills that I have, and the only way I can to get by, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Nobody would cut me a break, so why should I cut anybody else a break? It seems to me it's a mindset that develops over time that makes someone capable of doing stuff like that. It's a mindset and a set of circumstances, and it doesn't make the act any less evil. It just provides a framework. That type of person, I'm guessing, I'm not a psychologist. My own ignorance. Springboard, my own ignorance. Write in, tell me where I'm wrong. I'm not a psychologist, but somebody that does something like that kind of scam has a more complex framework for justifying whatever it is he's doing, whether it's selling phony jewelry to somebody or ripping off an old couple or running an internet scam that allows him to sleep at night. And how about the marauding, scavenging gang with the guns that rapes and murders and steals food? Not a real complex situation there. Pretty clear-cut set of actions, and I don't know that there's any kind of framework in operation. Can you do something like that and still be considered sane? I mean, from my point of view, no. So that's an evil deed. Now we can get into the gray area. The young kid that picked up a gun and joined that gang a week before, or that morning, or whatever, found out that he could get food, he could get fresh water, he could steal money or clothes, and that he was in a better fed, better financial situation than he was before he joined this roving group of sickos. And then they come across that house, and they do rip off the food, and do the rape, and do the murder. But the kid's standing by. The kid's kind of appalled. Or maybe the kid even remembers something like that happening to his own family. But he doesn't do anything about it. Because his choices are, if he does try to do something about it, then he gets a bullet too. But inaction, a failure to act, does that make him evil? If I know that there's a village somewhere where the water's contaminated and the kids don't know how to read and they're in dire need of medical facilities or attention or work of some kind to help rebuild their lives, some form of education or even entertainment to make their lives something a little less hellish, if I know that that's the case and I don't sell everything I have, buy a plane ticket, go over there and start working, if I don't do that, does that make me evil? Let's think of another deed. Let's think of another gray area deed. The guy pulls a gun out of his holster and shoots a man to death. Is that an evil act? This is one of those it depends things. With a little more detail thrown in, say you find out that the guy that was shot had a machete in his hand, had clearly burned out pretty much most of his reasoning capability through whatever drugs he happened to be using, and was running towards some kids in a schoolyard, refusing to stop when ordered to do so. And the person doing the shooting was a police officer. Now is it an evil act? Is the taking of life in any form an evil act? Suppose you gathered up that gang. Suppose you positively, absolutely, without a doubt, identified three guys out of that gang. Two that held the woman down, one that sexually assaulted her, and you knew that one of the three pulled the trigger that killed the husband. But they weren't admitting which one. Or say all three shot him. And you put those guys to death. Just for argument's sake, you're the roving military police force, the de jure power in the land, maybe not the de facto, and you come across this situation, and you catch this gang, and you find those three guys. The facilities for a trial, they don't exist. A courtroom, lawyers, a jury, in a country where you as military police are lucky they can afford to give you bullets, if they've expanded your power to perform executions, and you take those guys out. Does that make you evil? Let's step away from that for a second. Let's slip over to the other side of the coin. Good deeds, good acts, good people. I could argue that most of the people I know, and certainly the vast majority of the people in my area here, I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could go into wild speculation and conclude that the majority of people in the United States are good, or rather, do predominantly good deeds. Or do you define yourself as being more good by refraining from doing the bad deeds you really want to, by not exercising your right to bear arms, clicking off the safety, and blowing the tires out of the car that just cut you off? Wonder what would happen if all those good people actually sold everything they had, got plane tickets, and went over to help whatever village they were going to go over and help by making bricks, making huts. Those who knew anything, teaching people how to get more out of the soil, or their kids how to read, or whatever. What would happen? Are there enough people to go around, even if everybody did that? People that voluntarily work in soup kitchens? People that get together their old clothes and put them in the donation bin? I'm going to swear now, and I'm going to tell you that something that really bugs the shit out of me is the title of this piece of dreck that's on television called American Idol. I resent that program. I've never watched more than a few minutes of it, and those few minutes were because someone else happened to have it on. I would never voluntarily actually tune in. That absolute piece of shit. I resent the title alone, because it slaps a label on the entire United States and says to the world, this is who we think a hero is. This is our idol. This is who we idolize. I don't care how talented a contestant is. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to entertain people. That's fine. Should you be idolized for it? In the meanwhile, you got some poor schmo who's never even had his name in the newspaper volunteering his free time to help build houses and all these different house-building homeless situations. He won't be idolized. He's nobody's idol. Matter of fact, he'll get fined if he makes a mistake on his income tax. I'm getting off track, and I'm getting a little mired because it is a vast, vast subject. There are good deeds. There are certainly good deeds. They're stopping to help whoever it was that broke down at the side of the road if they don't... Yeah, whatever you said. Stopping to help somebody that broke down, buying some $2 piece of chocolate or something from a kid working to raise money for his school when you know, it cost them something like 30 cents. You sticking a couple of coins or a dollar in whatever that cup is that they're holding outside the store. Little crap. And there's big crap, which ain't crap. I know a doctor, an allergist, who went, and this is a successful guy. This is an example of power in responsible hands. I've always admired this guy. A doctor who went to Africa with his son. I believe he took his son with him, I'm not sure. And, you know, I mean, pro bono, it cost him to help out in one of those dire drought situations. They needed medical aid. He went over there and he gave it. I mean, no, he didn't stay over there, but you know what? He did a lot more than most people do. That's a good deed. He was at a stoplight once. There was a car in front of him. The car wasn't moving when it turned green, and rather than lean on the horn and get pissed, he looked at the driver and saw that the guy had slumped over. Got out of his car, went up front, checked him out, gave him CPR, and revived him. Guy was dying. That's a good deed. I mean, fortunately, he knew what to do. I mean, is it a good idea to go to some war-torn country if you don't know squat and just go to where the kids are kept and some kind of safe haven, if there is one, a hospital or whatever? Maybe yourself, maybe a couple of buddies, and just make them laugh? Is that possible? I just got a visual. I had to start recording again. I just got a visual of a couple of guys doing pratfalls or doing a Three Stooges routine. You know, you visualize these things in your head, and I was visualizing a room full of kids getting a good laugh that they probably hadn't had in years. And then I thought, you know what? You could possibly have half the kids, if not all the kids, just crying and getting upset because all they've seen is real violence, and that there's such a cultural divide that the concept of slapstick just never happened to make it overseas. They didn't grow up in a culture that could perceive a twisted nose or a bash in the head as funny. What's the right thing to do? The intentions are good. You ride in with a truckload of grain or rice or some food staple that will keep the people alive even for months while they try and rebuild something that got destroyed, where they get strength enough to dig the holes to bury their relatives, and that's a good deed. And you hang around long enough to make sure everything's okay, and then you move on to the next village or you go home, and then suddenly the gangs, the guys with the guns, find out that there's this village that's got all kinds of food. You just made them a higher profile target, and it happens all over again. You know, I mean, what do? There's good deeds, there's good intentions, and intentions is a very important word because that's what this is leading up toward, and I think that's probably what I'm going to get into next, because I've got almost a laughable example of it, but it's the most clear-cut in my mind. It certainly doesn't show me up for any kind of humanitarian or world traveler or anybody that's gone out of his way to make sure good things happen, but it's the most clear-cut in my mind, and that's what I'm going to get into next. First, I'm going to play a promo for a podcast, and I hope this isn't going to be one of those situations where, oh, I've just listened to all this morbid stuff. He's talking about evil. Why doesn't he stop talking about evil? My God. Adam, shut up. Gotta sit down and relax here, and you're talking about all this dire that's going on. Thank you. Sorry. It was good and evil. Well, the example I'm going to give is very light.
First, I'm going to play this podcast promo, and I'll be back in a bit. That was a good promo.
And that's a good podcast. And I'm going to continue now with good stuff. Let's leave evil for a good long while. And I will get to that example that I was thinking about before, but let's lighten it up a little bit. The forces of good. Good people, good deeds. Hurricane Katrina sucked, but there were hundreds of volunteers involved in trying to make things just a little bit better for the folks that got displaced or lost a relative or whatever. Not to mention the hundreds of thousands that donated to the Red Cross. And you have to know, because I'm pretty sure a few of you out there have met that mom or that dad that puts in a little bit of extra time to work with kids, whether it's in a community group or a church group or Cub Scouts or Girl Scouts, whatever. Sometimes it's just the crazy dad that tells bad jokes to all the kids and drives them to the campground or the meeting after he's put in one hell of a week at work. There's a whole lot of that type of person around. And I have to conclude that worldwide, I have to conclude this because it makes up my universal picture. It makes up my vision of what the universe is like as far as people are concerned. I have to believe that worldwide, most human beings don't want to see other people in pain and don't want to be the cause of it. If you want to call it selfishness, if you want to call it the virtue of selfishness, then let's have some more selfishness. I'm taking a guess here, but I think that the majority of human beings don't want to see other human beings in pain, or animals, or anything. They don't want to see other creatures in pain, and they don't want to be the cause of it. It's one of them paradoxes that you push to the back of your mind when you have a hamburger. And they don't want to see people in pain. They don't want to see people killed or lose their houses, or they don't want to see kids running around without their parents, or sick or injured, because it makes them feel bad. And I guess one of the definitions you can come up with for good, or the force of good, is the fact that it does make you feel bad. I mean, if you see pain or injury or injustice, and it causes you to be unhappy and uncomfortable, then I guess, why not call it a virtue? And on the flip side, if you can define a person as evil, it would probably be the person that gets some kind of joy, personal satisfaction, some weird kind of delight when there is pain and injury and injustice. I'm hoping they're in the minority, and I'm also hoping that that type of personality is not a prerequisite and a greased track to leadership, to high levels of power that control lots and lots of people's lives. Now, I mentioned something before about intention, and it became the core issue in a place that I discovered probably, I think it's 3 years ago now. And I call it a place. It was actually a virtual world. It was one of those setups where
the company had a series of servers, and they had developed software or modified software. That was pretty much a do-it-yourself MMO. It was a do-it-yourself 3D world. You rent space on their server. You could have so many people. You could have a world that was just so big. And you put the mountains where you want the mountains. You put the castles where you want the castles. You can make different things if you had enough skill. But it was pricey. But not badly done. I mean, compared to something like the major players out there, like the EverQuests or the World of Warcrafts, it didn't come close, but it was the very first one that I had ever stepped into, so of course I was impressed as hell. And it really wasn't all that bad looking. It was much better than I had expected. I had only just started looking for 3D environments online. And one of the people that had rented, and I'm not actually sure what their setup was because they had an incredible discount, I think because they started with the company. One of the people that rented was a guy that set up a fantasy realm for the purpose of doing a role-playing game, a fantasy role-playing game, developed and evolving through this type of environment. Now, you could only do so much in the place, and it all depended on SQL programming, PHP, three-dimensional modeling. Quite a bit of skill had to go into making it work, but it was an impressive thing to see if you'd never been in a 3D world before. And I was chomping at the bit as soon as I walked around in this place and saw what they were doing with their world setup, their storyline, the avatars, the little characters that you run around inside the world wearing. I wanted to make new stuff, and I did. Since I made something like 500 models for the place before I finally left. But the concept of good and evil left something to be desired there in terms of how their characters viewed the 3D world, the world within the story, and how it was treated in the language. And I'll give you that example after this podcast promo, because I've reached my first destination. Back in a bit. Another one. Another excellent podcast. Oh, man. Every other podcast is better than mine. That's enough. Whining time is over. So this place is called Active Worlds. I'll put a link in the notes on how to get to it if you're interested in it, you know. If you've never been to a 3D environment, you'll be impressed. If you played World of Warcraft or EverQuest or any of those heavy hitters, you're not going to be real impressed with the graphics. But for $7 a month, I guess you get what you pay for. And there's more of a sense of community there. I mean, the thing about it is, the real draw, so far as I'm concerned, if you were ever going to get yourself involved in that at all, which I did pretty heavily, actually, is the fact that you can change your environment. I mean, you go into WoW and you want a castle someplace else, or you've defeated some character or other, you can actually decide if you're in charge of the place or you're on the team, the volunteer labor squad that makes things happen in there. You can decide to change such and such a palace into a ruin, or you could burn a place down, or you can directly affect the environment. So as an RPG, that's probably the closest I've ever seen online to an actual role-playing game. I mean, they call the others RPGs, but I don't think so. You have to have the loosest definition of what a role-playing game is to call those things RPGs. So they set this one world up, this one sub-world of Active Worlds. They set it up, called it a place, called it Drayta, or Active Worlds role-playing game. The land itself is called Drayta. They stuck four cities in it, four major cities, which
essentially reflected four aspects of human personality. One was the city of light, one was the city of chaos, one was the city of darkness, and one was the city of moral law and order. I don't know quite how that really fits, but depending on how you felt or what kind of character you wanted to play, you'd become a citizen of one of those cities or not, and each city had a presiding god. There were four deities in this world. There was a deity of light, a deity of law, a deity of chaos, and a deity of darkness. And this was the interesting thing. When I first entered the world, as far as the storyline went, the deity of darkness was missing, locked away. Apparently because she had tried to take over the world and kill everyone. Which does not get you invited back to parties. So there, apparently these gods and the goddess are all siblings. She's a sister, they're three brothers, they locked their sister away because she was just so naughty. And part of what was happening, and I was only in there probably for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Part of what was happening was she's supposedly going to be making this comeback. So they all have temples in each of these cities. And her temple was kind of a, for the 2 weeks that I was first there, was kind of a ruin. And then suddenly it was in relatively good repair. I mean, they all look ancient. But the thing was, it was walled off. Essentially, you couldn't enter the thing because it had these big steel gates in front of it. But suddenly it was in reasonable repair. In other words, the roof wasn't caved in anymore and the doors were operational. But the gates were locked, and the thing about the gates was, for some reason, they decided, if you touched them that particular week, you would die, or you would take lots of damage. And as it got closer to when she supposedly was going to be coming back, the interior of the thing, now this is the goddess of darkness, okay? The interior that you could see of the temple was spinning at high speed and glowing blood red. So you've got this temple with gates that'll kill you if you touch them. You got a blood red glow coming out of the interior with its architecture spinning insanely on the inside. And she sends one of her, now this does relate to good and evil, I'll get to it, I swear. She sends one of her priests, whom she has invested with power, into this world. And it was just one of the avatars they had laying around. And he comes in and starts talking about letting forces in from the other side to take the city. Never mind that it had a king that was supposedly in charge of it and that people were living there. Whatever. The queen from the city of chaos happened to be there one night with her retinue, her high chamberlain or whatever, her big bruiser fiancé with a sword and an attitude. We're hanging out in the city because, well, that's just what they did. If there was nothing going on at home, the royalty from each city, which were players, would go hang out wherever the action was. And I was standing there, and somebody said, is that thing still spinning in there? And I typed in, it was text interface, and I typed in, the seat of evil still revolves within. Because I was a very annoying role player. I was one of those irritating guys that you hope never joins your particular party because I always tried to role play in iambic pentameter. Yeah, people hate that. Sorry, I like to talk funny. When I role play, I like to talk funny, but I'm getting off on a tangent. So I said, the seat of evil still revolves within. And you would have thought that I had reached down their throats, grabbed them by their spleen, pulled it out, and showed it to them. Because I said the word evil. And I got something like four answers almost simultaneously from every other character around me saying, oh, it's not evil. It's not evil. It's only darkness. Apparently, and I didn't know this, you could do whatever you wanted to anyone else in this place, if you could get away with it, behave in any way, follow any line of conduct you cared to, that brought destruction, pain, death, misery, or whatever to other players, and take no responsibility whatsoever for your character's actions. I mean, your character didn't have to take the responsibility. Obviously, it's a game. But your character didn't have to suffer any repercussions because they were worshippers of darkness. They weren't evil. They were worshippers of darkness. I mean, it got so ridiculous. It got so ridiculous that people were afraid. I mean, the definition was so skewed and obscure and slanted that the word evil essentially was stricken from the lexicon of this place. It was not a part of the vocabulary. You couldn't call anything evil. It was only darkness. So somebody went into somebody's house and slipped poison into their breakfast and killed them, that wasn't an evil act. They were just serving the forces of darkness. It's a part of their religion, you see. They didn't do anything wrong. They were just worshiping in their own way. And if a couple of high-powered NPC, non-player characters, happen to show up with glowing red eyes and start shooting arrows into the citizens of your city of light, they're not evil. They're just forces of darkness. It's all completely natural, you understand. I finally had to define the difference for myself and then put up a web page to indicate just what it was that was going on there. And how twisted that view could be. It's basically, if you want to play a character that does rotten, nasty things because you want to blow off some steam, then do it. If you want to be the sneaky, evil, conniving, Machiavellian high priest that smiles at the congregation during the ceremony and then goes back and has roast baby for dinner, if you want to be that evil character, because you certainly can't do stuff like that at work, then do it. But call it that. If your character's going to do evil, call it evil. It's intention. It's what was intended. What they were doing, essentially, was they were mixing elements of entropy, natural darkness, things like night, cold, pain, snakes, spiders, creatures that don't have a particularly high level of popularity, death. You know, pain from stubbing your toe is pain, but it's not intended. It's not pleasant, but it's not evil. If you're caught overnight in really freezing weather, it's very cold, it's very painful, it's potentially dangerous. You could even die from it, but it's not evil. It's just the weather. It happens. So darkness happens. Evil is intended. And the same goes for good. There's natural good, at least in terms of how it affects you personally. If you've got a gorgeous day and a nice balmy night and there are no bugs out because they just haven't flourished yet, in other words, it's early spring and the weather is perfect, great, you feel great, it's wonderful, but it's not good, it just happens. If you find that you're in awful financial straits, and you're in danger of losing your house because of maybe 3 or 4 weeks out of work without the proper insurance, and you can't get things together, but everyone you know, all the friends that you've known forever that you've helped out occasionally, if they all get together and they pull their money and they send it to you and they say, that's our gift to you, get back on your feet, we love you, take care, that's not natural. That's good. That's a force of good. So good is intended. Light happens. I'll put a link to that page, too, if I still have it up. It's probably about 3 years old now. And I'm going to play another promo, because I like playing promos. I like these podcasts. I hope you go and visit them. I think you'll enjoy them. A lot of them have to do with role-playing games. I know you'll, well, two of them at least. But I hope you'll check them out, because they're extremely enjoyable, and they're great people doing them. And I'm going to shut up now. Back in a bit. And another thing, if you're going to call evil what it is to its face, good for you. If you're going to play if you're going to role play a character in a three-dimensional online world like that, that is or does evil things, because that's what you want to do, fine, good for you. It can really help let off steam. But the thing about recognizing it for what it is, not just, sneaking up behind someone and stabbing them in the back is not a vague random accident of the universe, and calling it, it's just the darkness. It really doesn't do much for the players that are playing the good guys. If you want to play a hero warrior of light, then you don't want somebody, then you want an enemy. You want a real, justifiable, easy to identify, no gray areas, black and white, enemy of some power to defeat or be defeated by. Part of the fun of the gameplay. I don't know. I don't think the thing I wrote and sharing it with as many people as possible, particularly the High Priest of Darkness, I think, I won't say that I took the place too seriously, because I was pretty much taking it about as seriously as everybody else. I mean, they were heavily into it. I was heavily into it. And the thing that was real about it was the experience of seeing a three-dimensional environment like that for the first time, and walking around in it of that level, of that quality. I mean, obviously I'd seen the knockoffs of Wolfenstein, and this place was leagues ahead of that. I mean, 3 years ago, you better be, otherwise you're not going anywhere. So it had an impact on me in terms of appreciating its art. It was like walking around in a giant three-dimensional work of art that you became a part of. And the fact that the place had some kind of a storyline going on made it even better. But I think I was a bit too in-depth, a little too scholarly, taking too meticulous an approach to how people were dealing with their characters. And I recognized it at the time. When I put the page up, I didn't think anybody was really going to take it seriously or get it. And I stayed there for something like another 2 years. Man, it is hot. I've been leaving the AC off because I wanted better audio quality. But I'm sorry, I'm sweating like crazy here. I apologize. I turned it on. So what's the question for this week? What's the good and evil question for this week? Is good that springs from selfishness really evil? I don't think so. I don't think that's the question either. Any of these topics, again, I got to remind you, anyone listening, no matter when you download this or any other episode of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, any topic, write in and give your opinions, your thoughts, your insights, and they'll be read here on the show. The address is anim5@anim5.com. And you can reach the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space webpage, which is a subsidiary of Atom5.com, by going to www.atom5.com. Click on the little yellow dummy, and it'll take you right there. And all these folks' podcasts that I've been playing the promos for, they're linked there on the IDDFOS webpage as well, so you can get to those guys too. So what about this darkness and light rather than good and evil? Because that's pretty much what was being applied there. Getting into natural cosmic opposites. Darkness that happens and light that happens. The forces of entropy versus the forces of what? Energy? Growth? Dynamics? And the argument used to be in this place, which was pretty much the same kind of dime store philosophy that I've been prattling on about for the past, I don't know how many podcasts. Because I never do any real research before I flick this switch here and start yakking. A consistent argument used to be, well, you can't have light without darkness. You can't appreciate the good without the bad. Well, all right. You can't have existence itself without opposites. I mean, down to the polarity of the particles that make up existence itself, or at least the part that we can feel, you've got the positive and negative. That was another funny thing I used to hear. Darkness is faster than light because no matter where light goes, darkness is there first. As far as opposites go, cosmic opposites, you don't get events of any kind without opposing forces. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens unless there are opposing forces, opposites. One of the basic exercises, I think, I'm trying to remember this, I'm probably getting it wrong too, just like the Rosetta Stone thing. One of the basic exercises of determining space and time is to picture a total void, absolute blackness, and suddenly you see a sphere. Doesn't matter what color, it's just a round thing, a ball. And since all you can see is the ball, it could be traveling through the absolute void, and if that's the only thing that exists in the universe, it could be traveling at a million miles an hour. It would make no difference, because there's nothing else to compare it to. You can't see that it's traveling a million miles an hour, or 900 miles an hour, or whatever. All right, 185,000 miles an hour, just 1,000 below the speed of light. You can't see that it's traveling because it has nothing relative to it. You put another sphere in that universe, then there is something to compare it to. But still, it's a flat universe because you've only got two dimensions defined. Now, we're imagining, of course, that the spheres are points. As soon as you put a third one in there, then you've got a three-dimensional universe. Then you've got one point that can move in one direction, one that can move in another, and one that can move, let's say, toward you, if the other two are moving to your right and left. And as soon as you have that event, then you have time. A duration emerges as a property of those points moving. But the basic concept of opposite forces, whether they're good or bad in the natural universe, in the laws of physics, is a moot point. They're not. There's no assigned emotional value to the event. It just happens. But they are opposites. One point is behaving in the opposite manner of the other point. And if they collided together and energy resulted, that would be, again, more opposite forces. And without that dynamic, down on the subatomic level, your body essentially would fall apart along with everything else around you. If you don't have those opposites, you don't even have particles that are cohesive enough to form a gas. You want to get up on a larger scale, you wouldn't be able to stand up. Just the basic act of standing up or walking requires friction, requires opposite forces.
So when all of a sudden, Anand, did you become this Mr. Science? Well, why are we talking particle physics here? You were going to get into the yin and the yang. You know, this is not quantum theory class. Or it shouldn't be, because
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll admit that, I don't.
I know lots of fancy names like quarks, bosons, leptons, neutrons, protons, electrons. All those on names. I remember my high school physics. The positive and negative charges. But who gives a crap? What people want to know is, why do they care? Why does it matter?
I guess the question is, how is it that these natural things get assigned good and evil? And how is it that natural darkness, natural empathy, natural light, natural goodness, get invested with human values? The sea is a harsh mistress. Oh, the weather is evil outside. And they obviously because of the fact that we're conscious entities, human beings are self-aware, I hope, then natural things or accidental things that happen, good or bad, have an emotional impact on us. So going back, and it goes back to intention, too. My brain is taking me in my freewheeling Marx Brothers approach to thought. I don't apply any logic or work here. I don't actually try to make any sense. I'm hoping you people will do that by writing me and showing me where I messed up. But if somebody just died of some illness that they'd contracted over time, then this house has lost a family member, not because somebody came in and poisoned their breakfast. The result is the same. The loss of a family member, a loved one, a son or a daughter or a wife. The effect is the same. The emotional impact is negative. There's pain. It hurts. And if it was done by poison, then you can identify the fact that there was a perpetrator, if not the perpetrator himself, and the anger and the pain and the loss then becomes something that gets intertwined with intention. Because the emotional result of pain inflicted on you, that emotion is a natural thing. Rage, sorrow, misery, because of some pain or other, it is a natural outcropping of the human animal. But when it gets mixed in with the accidental, when it intertwines with a cause, when it starts affecting your behavior and your intentions, then it stops being natural. And it starts being intended. You want revenge against this disgusting murderer. You want revenge against this vicious murderer that stole a family member from you and caused you so much pain and your family. And you're going to take that revenge, and you feel fully justified in going after the guy and doing whatever it is you feel like doing to him when you catch him. Even if it's an illness, if it's not an intended murder, or if it was a high wind that blew them off a cliff at some point because they lost their balance. If only it weren't windy that day. If you take a natural occurrence personally, then again, your emotion gets intertwined and assigns value judgments to events and colors your intentions. The universe was not very good to me, so why should I be very good to the universe? As if it had a personality that was aimed at you. I feel that way almost every day, at least once. And if you're that guy that was out of work, whose friends pulled their money and kept you afloat and your family fed for just long enough for you to get through the rough patch, I don't think it would make you feel bad about your fellow human beings. And the fact that you would be less worried about where the next meal was going to come from couldn't help but affect your intentions and how you behave. Decisions you'd make, they too become intertwined with the world around you. I don't think I'm getting anywhere with this, honestly. It's extremely fuzzy in my own head. Extremely funny, funny, it can be. It's very fuzzy in my own head, the concept of opposites. The fact that we're physical creatures, that we've got a built-in paradox. We're physical creatures, we're animals that are not built to survive, not here, anyway. If God had meant man to fly, he'd have given him wings. Yeah, well, if God had meant man to survive at all, never mind the wings, how about a sharper set of teeth, maybe some claws, faster running speed, better sense of smell, a tougher hide, the ability to not die of exposure in most environments unless you find shelter. Now, of course, there are animals out there that are born somehow knowing just how to make their own nests. Human beings aren't, so they gather together whatever their hardwired brains tell them is going to make a good nest, whether it's a bird or a rodent, and they're able to weather it out and not freeze to death. But beyond that, if that's all the human beings could do, we wouldn't be around. No, we are only here because we manipulate the environment. We are at odds with the environment we live in. We have to change it in order to survive. We have a knowledge of our own existence and a knowledge of our own mortality. And yet, even ants know what to do when they're born. Even ants form colonies and go about whatever business it takes them to survive. But a human being is not told what to do. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're here for. This is how you survive. You know it by instinct. No, we don't. We've got residual instincts, but nothing that's going to keep us alive. Not without the intelligence to totally manipulate the environment. There's opposites there, too. Paradox of the human being. That's what HTTP:// stands for. Humans, the total paradox, what went wrong. Not real happy with this podcast either, because I didn't get anywhere. I don't know if I made any particular point, and I have no idea what the question should be. I'm not going to ask anybody to write in a letter saying, define good and evil. I don't think so. I think you got better things to do with your time. Oh, I don't know. How about a song? Let me just throw a song out here, because I think we're going to wind it down. And I'll be saying byes on the opposite side of the song. Hope you enjoy this one.
The little chatterbox, the one with pretty auburn locks. Whom do you see? It's little orphan Annie. She and Sandy make a pair. They never seem to have a care. Cute little she, this little orphan Annie. Bright eyes, cheeks of rosy glow. There's a store of healthiness handy. Might size always on the go. If you want to know, Princess Sandy always wears a sunny smile. Now wouldn't it be worth the while if you could be like little orphan Annie?
Short and sweet, just like little orphan Annie herself. Am I a big Little Orphan Annie fan? No, not actually. I've got whatever recorded episodes survive. And just for nostalgia's sake, for historical purposes, I do enjoy listening to them. I just like that tune. I'd like to find the whole version of it, if anybody knows where that is. If a full version of that exists. Is Little Orphan Annie good or evil? I think she's good, and I don't think it's because she runs around with a dog fighting criminals and is nice to everyone and is super enthusiastic and has lots of moxie. She's good because she cares more about people than things. Now, we know that evil's going on, and we know that it's being perpetrated by human beings. And they'll justify it one way or another. But more often than that, the worst destruction, the worst misery is being caused because things are taking precedence over people. Leaving all fictional characters aside from old-time radio, comics, or whatever, you can generally tell if you're doing a good thing or if somebody else is doing a good thing if they're helping people rather than grabbing things. I don't know. Should I be wearing a collar while I say things like this, or a yarmulke? I mean, I'm not trying to come off as a member of the clergy here. I'm really not. They're just observations. I don't know that I did all that good a job with this particular installment, but at least we scratched the surface. And I knew we weren't going to get anywhere near a comprehensive discussion about good and evil. That won't happen until I get your feedback. And then I can read it at the beginning of the show, and we can go a little further into it. But for a podcast that's supposed to be listener-driven, I could use a spell at the wheel. So come on and just dash off a note. I don't need a novel. I don't need a novella. It doesn't have to be 3 pages long. Matter of fact, it's probably better if it isn't. Short and sweet, to the point. Do as I say, not as I do. But, yeah, Anim5 at Anim5.com. Very simple to remember, and I do hope to get some soon. Next episode, installment 10, I'll be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well for you. Thank you again for listening, and best of days.